Hey, welcome everybody to the Paul Wood Show. Today I'm really excited. We have a guest that's going to, I think we're going to learn many things from, particularly around the beginning of the year when people are thinking through their next steps personally and also on the career front. And so I'm very excited to welcome Marty Constant, who is the founder of the Agile Careerist Project. She has a history as a tech CMO. She's a speaker. She's an investor and has done a lot of really interesting work. So I'm looking forward to our conversation. Welcome, Marty.
Thank you, Paul. I am so happy to be here on your show.
Excellent. Well, it was great to have you. Hey, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about yourself, what you're doing today, and also kind of a little bit more about your career path.
Sure. What I'm doing today is I market myself as a career growth analyst. And that what that means is I study career agility on all fronts. What makes people tick, what makes people move, how people respond to change in today's disruptive environment. As you mentioned, I'm also an author and professional speaker. Today, I am working on the Agile Careerist Project. It is a result of 4 years of research, the creation of a body of work, and a series of workshops and a book.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, so I was intrigued when I heard the phrase Agile Careerist. How do you define that?
I define an agile careerist as someone who approaches their career in a way that is flexible and attends to the needs of today's work environment. The future of work demands that we respond to the type of technical changes, economic changes, financial changes in a way that we didn't have to 20 years ago or even 10 years ago. An agile careerist will do things like pursue learning on the side in their spare time, even if it's an online learning. It could be a massive open online course, free coursework. It could be education, or it could be taking on a freelance gig on the side. That's something that agile careers do often because they're always looking at things in parallel tracks, so that when things do get tough in the market, they have more options than others who stay the course with one line of thinking.
Yeah, this is such a subject that's close to my heart, just because, on this show, we talk so much about not only communications, but also obviously the disruptions that are happening in the market. And it just seems like that is really going to be the new norm. So I suppose a couple of thoughts. One is, thinking that you're going to have a career with an organization for a long term is such a rare thing these days, right? And also, at least in the reading that I've done, when you think about millennials and younger, they don't necessarily see the career path the same way they might have, that my generation or others would have seen it. Join a company, work your way up the ladder, but rather looking at their career as sort of a range of experiences. And it sounds like that is something, obviously, that you've looked at and how, I guess, what were some of your insights as to how people approached thinking more of in an agile way?
Well, one of the things that people do that approach the world with an agile mindset is they think about it in terms of how can I optimize what it is that I'm doing now and grow and make it to the next step. That often translates into 2 to 3 years of experience in one particular aspect of their profession. They may then move to another role in the same organization or hop to another organization. If you're not growing, you're not learning. I often remark, if you are optimizing creativity, growth, and happiness on those three fronts, you're moving in the right direction. So if you're exceedingly unhappy, it's time to look at what you're doing and make some change. If you're not growing, it's time to look at what you're doing to make some change. And of course, happiness is, probably one of the strongest drivers.
Oh, for sure. Well, let's zero in on that comment about growth and growing. You know, one of the things that I've observed is that let's say someone's moving along in their career path and they're in a role and they're quite exceptional at that role, or at least they're seen as a high performer. It almost strikes me that often there's a disincentive for the organization to kind of disrupt what's working. Have you experienced that at all, or do you have any advice for people who might be facing that kind of situation?
I think that's a universal experience. Think about if you're managing somebody and you've got a great department going. It's hard to lose someone that is just hitting it out of the park all the time. Yet if you really care about the growth of the company and the growth of that individual, it's incumbent upon you as a manager to make certain that high performer is also growing, because they're going to bring a lot more contribution to you, your network, your department, if that happens. If we think about what Reid Hoffman did in building LinkedIn back in, you know, early 2000s, he built that company, LinkedIn, on the premise that it's 2 to 3 year tours of duty. Optimize everything that you're good at and moving on to the next role. Many people stayed with the company and other people moved out of the company. But he felt that innovation happens when people are learning and growing. So he would rather people do that and bring innovation back to his network and the network of those working in his company.
Yeah, he's a smart guy, and I've often admired what LinkedIn has done, and even in his content, you know, thinking about not just yourself, but thinking about the we and how that's going to fuel more opportunities for everyone, I think is really interesting. Well, so let's stay on this topic for a minute. Have you seen any difference between, like, if you think about a 2 or 3 year kind of tour, if you will, of people who stay within an organization longer term versus people who move companies or move organizations?
I have. I've interviewed people in the course of my research, some of who have stayed with major corporations for 10, 15, and 20 years. And they started as an analyst. They moved on to more, you know, project management or program management, moved in to become VPs of the organization. Those companies were super, super smart to cultivate those high potential employees and keep them interested.
Yeah.
So it does happen. And it happens with people who really enjoy the experience of working in a larger organization.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess in my experience, sometimes rationally a manager will know that that's a benefit, right, to keep that person with the organization long term. But again, that conflict between keeping them in a role they're performing well in and moving them along, I think many times I've seen people literally wait just too long, even after the individual has come and said, I want to continue to grow, you know, that no action is taken because it's easier not to. And then the person leaves in 6 or 12 months, and there's sometimes surprise, which didn't ever make sense to me, because you had fair warning, you know, of the ability to continue to either change your role within the organization, change a client you're working on, or something else. And even with that, I think sometimes it's hard for people to accept that and move forward.
It's very true. It's you can see it. Paul, you've probably know people that you can just tell by their behavior or lack of motivation that they've stayed in an environment too long. And I often challenge people like that to think about the personal accountability of their own career and to think about the magic of the self-directed career. If we wait for reviews with our manager for once a year, even twice a year, we're not giving that manager the opportunity to really understand the needs that we have and the questions that we have about what is it that we can do to perform and grow more. And employees that make the appointments with their bosses on a regular basis rather than waiting to be asked for a meeting, those are the ones that are mystified that they become bored because they're not having that dialogue or conversation with the people that matter for their career.
No, it's a great point. Well, so obviously this is a big passion area for you. I'm curious. You mentioned, you know, you've done more than 100 interviews on the project. What was your inspiration? How did that start?
This is one of the favorite questions I have. I grew up in technology. My very first job out of college was in technology, in the design and in marketing area. And one of the things that I learned as I grew in my career is I became very close with the engineers that were developing the products that I was marketing. And I came to realize that they developed their products in a way, software products, software development, in a way that was really intriguing to me. I used to walk by the walls of the organization, the whiteboards, and their projects were scaled down to smaller increments. And they would work on an aspect of the project, get it done, collaborate, and move on. This was this was part of the process of agile software development.
Yes.
Getting a lot of feedback, lean product development, getting sufficient feedback. And I also worked in it during a time when software used to be developed over long periods of time, and then it would be launched, and then there'd be all these bugs for the next year. Instead of the fast iterations that started happening, this all happened when agile thinking became prevalent in software development, that let's not wait forever. Let's work with a smaller number of requirements, really get that product in the market, test it, and then make incremental improvement. And after doing this and watching this for a number of years, I came upon a group of global marketers that were applying these types of methods to marketing. Mm. You know, marketing shouldn't be done in a vacuum. It should be done in a very collaborative environment. So I got together on a project called Sprint Zero out in San Francisco in 2012, and we launched the Agile Marketing project, if you will, an open source project, so that we could be more mindful about how we get input, collaborate, work with all the different levels of the organization, and then no one's surprised or rejecting the work that marketing is putting out. So that's where it all started. And in 2012 is when I started getting the ideas about, this could really apply to the application on one's own career.
Wow, it's fascinating. I mean, it makes so much sense, right? And it's a proven model within the tech community. But it's something that we as individuals don't spend enough time thinking about, clearly. We're chatting with Marty Constant, author and speaker. And, you know, I'd love to move on to a couple of other questions. One is, I understand that you have a new book coming out, and I'm wondering if you can talk to us a little bit about that.
So the name of the book is Activate Your Agile Career, How Responding to Change Will Inspire Your Life's Work. And it will be coming out in March. And it is a result of 4 years of both my own research, primary research, but also commissioning a research on mid-careerists. I wanted to really understand, to collect more data on how people are responding to change, because our work environment is so dramatically different. So that's coming out in March. And some of the things that I've discovered is that there is a spectrum of decision making, or a spectrum of how people behave, that goes from agile thinking to steadfast thinking. So steadfast thinkers are very committed to doing what it is that they want to do. Steadfast careers are important in all of everyone's profession, yet if you move a little bit to the center of that spectrum, you're going to be able to be more relevant. You'll have a more relevant career and a more recession-proof career than if you stay to the steadfast end of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and these days that's more important than ever, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're seeing entire industries being disrupted. Obviously, we think that that's going to change and kind of escalate. So I suppose if you're not thinking this way, you can get caught kind of, you know, in the wrong place, if you will, if you're not thinking ahead about your own career. Yep. You know, to that end, for let's say you're so many industries, as I mentioned, are being disrupted. If you're a mid-career person in one of these industries, what kind of advice or what kind of things do you suggest that individuals should be thinking about as in navigating through that kind of change?
If I had to just answer that with one response, there's a lot of things. I would say do everything that is necessary to optimize your personal brand. Mm. Know who you are, what it is that you do, how to define it, and how to consistently market who you are to your internal organization. What are you better at than anyone else in the organization? You may do 10 things, but what is the one thing that you're better at? That's one way to build a brand. Another way to build a brand is to do things like speaking engagements for your profession. Say you're in a technology industry. I used to be in the security industry, mobile security, cybersecurity. If you're out in your industry talking about that topic, not only are you building your own brand, you are amplifying the impact of your employer brand. Personal branding has never been more important as it is today in fortifying the employer brand. And we all know how important the employer brand is today in this this free agent economy where unemployment is low. There's big competition for the right workers.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as I think you may have seen in my last show, actually recorded that at a WeWork in New York City. And what struck me in just being in the space for a few hours was, wow, so many small businesses and entrepreneurs, all of these young people not taking the traditional corporate path and rather saying, look, I'm gonna start something of my own. So you also have that dynamic, too, where the allure, if you will, of the larger kind of corporate career path is not as sure as it once was either. So to your point about employer branding, having advocates for your brand, your corporate brand, is going to be increasingly important. We're seeing that trend in the PR agency world as well, where, you know, you see an increasing number of clients going away from what I'd call an agency of record relationship and really just hiring specialists for certain needs at certain times. So that seems to be parallel, at least in that industry as well. You know, Marty, I want to go back to something you said about building your personal brand. And, you know, there are a number of large organizations where, you know, sounding your own horn too much, it can actually be frowned on. So is there advice that you might have on a balance there of how you can, you know, obviously pick the topic that you're passionate about and you want to be known for, but doing it in a way where you're still building your personal profile, but building your corporation's profile and not kind of being penalized for that?
The easiest way to do that is to raise your hand and to get known in the marketing department, in the PR department, the folks that want to put forth the capital, their thought capital out in the market on their industry. And if you volunteer to do those speaking engagements, that is an excellent way to both promote your employer brand as well as get your name out in the market. And think about it. If you're out speaking in the market, guess what? You get a chance to talk to everyone else out there in the industry, and you get to come back to the organization, come back and give a presentation to the company, to whoever wants to attend, to some of the things that you learned about the industry. You could put together your own lunch and learn.
Yeah, really smart. I like that a lot. And you make a good point, too. If you're out advocating for the corporate story, by association, you're also building your personal brand.
Absolutely. And I think that's, if you think, you know, I kind of heard in your voice, you're concerned a little bit about how corporations might think about this. I do think that they are threatened. As soon as they see, however, the part about helping them attract better talent, get their information out in the market. As soon as they see that, their eyes open and they're all for it. There's, I mean, there's all kinds of, I think of people like Richard Branson, who, you know, he is the brand, right? So he is Virgin, everything. And, you know, he is the leader too, but I'm certain he is a guy that with all of the people that work for him, he's not going to be threatened by anybody that is promoting Virgin Air or, you know, his 400 different divisions of his companies.
Yeah, it's a great point because he's not going to be able to have the bandwidth to do it all himself anyway, nor probably the interest. And that's, I'd argue, it's probably not the best use of his time, right?
Exactly.
He should be innovating, which he does so well. Oh, that's great. All right, we're talking with Marty Constant, author and speaker, an all-around smart person on the topic of agile careers. You know, Marty, I'd love to shift now, if you don't mind, to our lightning round and just ask you a few random questions.
Sure. Let's go.
Okay, great. Since you come out of the tech world, I'm curious, as you looked at CES this year, were there any kind of trends or new products that really caught your eye that may benefit us from a disruption standpoint?
You know, the CES this year, I wasn't as involved with it, but I think anything around artificial intelligence or what's next are going to be the kinds of things that rather than make people fearful, this whole notion of like, oh, robots are going to replace us. We can't afford to think like that. We have to figure out when we see something at CES, these new solutions coming out, we have to figure out how we can use that and how we can add something like the human interaction component. And so if I were in a department right now working for a corporation and I was fearful of how our AI was going to be managing customer service, I would want to make certain that we take in the new products that do what it needs to do, but figure out how we can add that human element into it. So maybe that could be a differentiator for us, because I do think that we are losing some of that human element. And the companies that figure out how to adopt the new and make certain that there really is a face and a voice and an interaction that is personal and accessible are going to be the winners.
I love that thinking. Yeah, because it's not running from it. It's saying, how can I make this work for me? And maybe use AI on lower and more mundane tasks like calendaring meetings or whatnot, and focusing on the things that are really going to add value in the creative aspects of the job. Yeah, love that. Person dead or alive you'd most like to have dinner with?
Wow, I was not prepared. I stumped Marty. But you know, it's better that you don't prepare, because then you can just be honest and sincere about it. I think there's actually two, but I'm going to start with one.
Okay.
Because you've given me one. I mentioned Richard Branson earlier, 400 companies. The way that he tackles problems and is always on to the next thing, embracing opportunities, taking risks, and his love of cultivating the next generation of entrepreneurs is absolutely intoxicating to me. That man will never retire, and he will always be giving. Even early on in his career, his solutions were giving to the community. Think of his story about Virgin Air when he wanted to create an airline that was more personable, that was more accessible. And it is. I flew it over in Australia. I don't fly it domestically here. It's amazing how different that airline is from some of our other airlines today.
Okay. And then in terms of, you know, obviously we're in the new year. I don't know if you have a New Year's resolution or your major aspiration for this year. What are you hoping to do big picture?
This year, my number one goal is to get the message out about agile thinking to as many people as possible.
That's great. That's great. Well, so we've been talking with Marty Constant, and it's just a pleasure to meet you, spend some time together, and wish you every success with your book launch. We'll look forward to reading that in the new year, and look forward to kind of tracking the progress of Agile Careerist as well. So thank you, Marty.
Sure. It's really been a pleasure. And if anyone is interested in more information, it's agilecareer.com with loads of free information on career agility guides and things of that nature that will help people navigate their career just a little bit easier than last year.
Fantastic. Well, I've peeked at that, but I think I'm going to go and download and study some of those documents that you talk about. Sounds like a real value add. Thanks all for listening. I look forward to talking with you all again on another Paul Wood Show.